First item on the agenda is a briefing pertaining to wind energy. Mr. Bowles? I don't know what... make sure Mr. Harper knows what's going on as far as the amended agenda is concerned, because I don't want him to be here. We've had some changes in it, and I don't want you to be sitting here expecting something that's not on the agenda. Ms. Watts.
Yes, sir. Mr. Commissioner, Commission members, what I want to do today is just give you a quick briefing on the staff work we've done over the last number of months that culminated in a report to the General Assembly at the end of February. In response to Acts of Assembly in 2009, in Chapter 766, which is Senate Bill 1350, that was actually sponsored by Senator Wagner. And so this probably should be titled An Evaluation of Opportunities for Offshore Wind Energy in State Territorial Waters. As you'll see as we go through this, and as we probably prove the obvious, there's a lot of conflicts and a lot of issues going on in the Bay and in Virginia's near shore waters, which we tried to capture in this report, which is more or less a mapping exercise using various data and GIS information to display the various uses and conflicts that would occur with regard to potential wind energy sites in state waters. Real quickly, just looking at the Acts of Assembly and what it authorized, it did several things. One, it amended Title 28.2 of the Code to authorize us, the Commission, to lease areas for renewable energy projects in state waters. That code exists. We're authorized to lease areas, but it's mainly directed at mineral resources, leasing for mineral resources. And the code was amended to allow us to lease areas for wind energy and other types of renewable activities that might occur in Virginia waters. It authorized the Commission to require a royalty for any activity associated with that lease, and it asked us to amend the state minerals or Sebacres Minerals Management Plan to become the state Sebacres Minerals and Coastal Energy Management Plan. And what we were asked to do for this last General Assembly session, as of March 1, we were required to report. We were asked to evaluate where there might be opportunities in state waters for wind energy, considering all the issues and uses that might occur, and then provide that report to the General Assembly. So it's that last bullet, the green highlighted information there, that is the subject of our evaluation starting last fall and through the winter, and then reporting to the General Assembly. This information was reported to the General Assembly in a written document, and it's known as Senate Document 10, and it's on the General Assembly webpage if you want to find it. I've got a black and white copy I could provide any of you, but as you'll see from the maps that I've provided in here, you really need to see the color version. And if you need the link for that, we could email you the link, the address from the General Assembly webpage to view that if you need to. What kind of renewable energies are we talking about? The potential for current this here, wave action to generate electrical current, electrical energy, and of course wind energy. Right now, from what we understand, based on some of the technology and conditions in Virginia waters, we probably don't have conditions suitable for wave-generated power, nor do we likely have current suitable for generating renewable energy power. But the opportunity may exist for wind energy. In fact, it was wind energy that the General Assembly asked us to take a look at. So what are we talking about in terms of the potential for wind energy, you know, statewide, and what are the wind resources? When I say wind resources, it's really the speed at which the wind blows. How much power is there in the wind? And there's a classification scheme for characterizing wind resources. It's displayed here on this map of Virginia. And you can see what the point of this is. There's wind resources in the ridge tops in the western part of the state, and then wind resources along the coast of Virginia over the water. One thing to note here is the blue line more or less shows the state's 3-mile territorial boundary, and we're only talking about our authority out to that point and our assessment of wind resources and conflicts out to the 3-mile boundary and not beyond. You've probably read a lot and heard a lot about Mineral Management Service and efforts off Virginia's coast to foster wind development, and that would be in the federal waters off of Virginia Beach. And I'll show you a map at the end of the presentation about some of the things they're looking at, some of the issues there. But anyway, one thing to note here is that based on the power classification and use of larger turbines to generate a substantial amount of power, they say, or the consensus is, that class 5 winds are necessary to make it economically feasible. And as you can see, most of those class 5 winds are in the Atlantic Ocean, mostly beyond Virginia's 3 nautical mile boundary. But there are some up in the Bay, Kokomo, Tangier Sound area. Most of the rest of the area are class 4 winds or 3 or lower. Just to highlight that a little more closely, and this is the kind of maps that we included in the report. And I want to give a special thanks to the Virginia Coastal Program at DEQ and their GIS technician, Nick Mead, who did a lot of work for us and helped us create these maps using various sources of data that we got from folks, and most of which would have been the Virginia Coastal Energy Research Consortium, VSERC, who's been doing a lot of work at looking at opportunities and wind resource issues in state waters, and they have done a lot of background work and provided some data that we then cranked into the maps that were included in this report. But what you can see is, the state boundary and the areas of wind resources in Virginia waters. And what kind of turbines and resource or types of development are we talking about? This is a photo of a turbine in Europe. This is probably one of the larger types of turbines, which I think the industry is moving to in high wind sites for power generation at the commercial scale or the industrial scale. And I think, it's hard to imagine how big this is, but, you just look at the jack-up barge that's there to help build the thing, the size of the tug that's associated with it. You get a sense of the size of this structure. It's probably in the order of 400 feet tall to the tip of the blade. On the other hand, we have structures in this country, not in the water. There's no in-water wind turbines in the United States at this point. But we have several a number of turbine facilities and wind energy facilities in the Midwest and Texas, and a number near the coast. This happens to be Hull, Massachusetts. It's what's called a community wind project, where Hull, Massachusetts erected a turbine, and actually have 2 now, I believe, that generate power for the community and help augment the power needs of the community. So it's referred to more as a community scale project, where you have 1 or 2 turbines on the order of several megawatts, maybe 5 megawatts of generating capacity that are focused towards generating power for a particular use, in this case the community, or it could be a particular business or industry. Whereas the other project that you saw before was more of an industrial scale project where you had multiple turbines located out over state waters or federal waters, and they would generate power on the order of 100 megawatts scale. So you would have scores of turbines out in an array generating power that would be sold directly to the electrical distribution system, not necessarily directly that one use or community. And those are the types of projects we kind of were considering when we were doing this evaluation, this scale of projects from the community to the what we'll call the industrial size turbines. And here's just a graphic showing the magnitude of the types of projects or the types of projects representing the largest offshore turbines in Europe. And this is just for scale next to the Washington Monument. And then you have the Hull, Massachusetts projects and the size of the, what we call the community scale projects here and here. So what we did was we went through an evaluation process really focused on these first two bullet items for this assessment was, you know, what are the resources and use conflicts that would preclude offshore wind development in Virginia, and then identify and evaluate other potential resources that require further analysis and maybe evaluations through a potential lease review or a permit application review for a project. And another thing that we're going to have to focus on as we continue with this development of permitting authority or leasing authority for state use of state waters is, you know, particular requirements for these types of structures. They present a different sort of scope of issues than our typical projects. Typically, we deal with water-dependent structures. You know, that's a requirement to be permitted. You know, a bridge, for example, or a marina, or a power line crossing. It has to get across the river, or a submerged power or gas pipeline. It has to go into the river to get to the other side, so it's water-dependent. Wind energy facilities aren't necessarily water-dependent. They're wind-dependent, and state and wind over water provides better opportunities for power. The Virginia Energy Plan that was developed in response to legislation in 2006 recognized that and suggested that there may be opportunities in state waters for wind energy, provided it doesn't conflict with other uses. So we feel like the Virginia Energy Plan sort of set the stage for the opportunity to put these in state waters, even though it's not dependent activity.
But I think that's important. Isn't it also true, though, that the transmission lines that would be coming through there would be water dependent?
Well, that's true. So the line that would come from the power source, say, and the ocean and the other waters into Virginia, again, it's the same kind of concept. You got to get across the river. So, from that perspective, I think you could say it is water dependent. But it's a given that there would be transmission lines from these facilities that would have to be part of the evaluation and review process. Just a real quick list of some of the things we were considering and looked at. And what we did is we contacted a bunch of folks that we referred to as an ad hoc advisory work group, invited folks from the wind industry, a few folks from the wind industry, resource agencies, other organizations to come meet with us. We had two meetings to get their input on issues and concerns and how we should go about characterizing this issue for encroachments of potential wind energy projects over state waters. And these are what we've classified as use conflicts and resource conflicts. Down here, just one thing. I think, as you well know, one of the big issues is probably going to be avian species and should include in avian bats. Bats has become a big issue with wind turbines. Whether it's going to be over water, I don't know that we quite know that, but over land and on ridgetops, it's been recognized as an issue. And that's where we as an agency typically haven't managed impacts of things above the water. It's usually what's in the water and on the bottom, but certainly that's going to be an issue of something above the water that could be impacted. And I'm sure as we go through permits or leases for things like this, we'll hear a lot about those particular issues. So what we did is we, based on the information we had and the coordination with the folks in the ad hoc committee, we characterized state waters as excluded areas, major potential for resource and use conflicts, moderate and lesser. And of course, you can see we use red, yellow, and green, stop, caution, go type of characterization. But with regard to excluded areas, those are areas where there's a particular use or designated use of the waterway that would preclude something else being in there. It's navigation channel, for example. Or Baylor oyster grounds, or even leased oyster grounds. You just can't put something else in those areas where there's already a designated use. So we tried to characterize what they might be, as well as military training areas where the military said, we use this for training, and WALPS uses areas for their flight operations, for rocket launching. They did not want to see, I don't think they want to see, other structures that would conflict with their ongoing uses. So we characterized those as excluded areas and mapped them that way. And then major conflicts, this is what we viewed as impacts to shallow waters. We didn't want to see these in shallow waters where you have issues like SAV and agricultural plans and that type of thing. And also the bird issue was part of this. There's a classification of bird utilization based on continental importance, regional and state importance. That's recognized here. Moderate is more of fisheries conflict in certain areas and other uses of potential use of state submerged lands. And lesser is where we didn't really identify a lot of things that would say you've got a big problem with wind energy, but we recognize that there are other uses throughout the bay and throughout coastal areas where you're going to have potential conflicts that we might not recognize until we go through a full public interest review for a project. So this is what the map looked like when you put all that together, the various categories, various issues that we could get information on the map. This is what we ended up with. Excluded areas is in the gray color here, and then you have the major conflicts and moderate and lesser conflicts. And as you can see, there's a whole lot of area that's classified as excluded. That's either due to public oyster ground existence, lease existence, or military training areas and state waters. And a lot of this up here is the Wallops Flight Facility, FAA exclusion, and then you have the navigation channels and battle grounds. You could probably imagine.
Tony, you're obviously not colorblind. I have a hard time between the green and the yellow.
Well, I will say that on the computer screen,
it's red gray.
It looks a little bit better.
I didn't know there were two colors.
that's yellow and this is green. Yeah, it's not very good, is it? It looks better on this computer screen than it does on the projector.
It does look like
the projector.
The FAA exam, doesn't it?
But just to pull out some of the information that's in that last slide for excluded areas, just to show you what classifications of projects we use. And maybe this shows up a little better, but I'm not so sure that gray and this, you know, shows up much better. But anyway, it's bridges and shipping lanes, military training areas, exclusion security areas, public oyster grounds, and private leases. So that's a lot right there. And like I said, when I started this, maybe what I've done is prove the obvious to everybody, or shown the obvious, but that's what... And just looking at the military, you know, what are some of the military uses, and this is derived from VSERP information just to show, and again, the mainland doesn't show up very well in this slide, but again, the types of military and different designated uses by the military for these areas and why they were classified as excluded. Just the shipping lanes and the bridges. This again was data that VSERC pulled together and utilized. The Baylor grounds. This does show up better on the screen in terms of the main one, but I think you can imagine the Eastern Shore. You know, the seaside. You know, obviously a lot of private leases and public oyster grounds. And then, of course, you know, they were grounds mostly on the western shore in Pocomoke Sound and Tangiers a lot. This is what we came up with in our maps for, you know, major conflict. And we really looked at the two major issues here. It's the continental bird importance. This is a corridor for large-scale migratory use by birds of continental importance. I mean, they migrate amongst the continents. And there's a very... I call it sensitive, for lack of a better description, area for those resources. Another issue is the shallow water areas and the lagoon system on the seaside bays. I mean, if you've been there, you know there's not much water on the seaside bays except in the channels that would be used for shipping. It's either that or it's Baylor ground or it's private leases, and just getting in there to put in a wind turbine would probably be problematic, let alone the wind turbine itself. And then you have the very shallow water areas, you know, along the western shore and up in the Pocomoke Sound. And that would be areas that are very biologically important, dynamically important, nearshore environment, and where you can have most of your SAVs. And so we wouldn't want to put large-scale wind farms or turbines in those areas as conflict. Just to highlight the data from the birds, this was provided by Brian Watts at the Center for Conservation Biology at William & Mary and VCU. And again, it shows the area of continental importance along the seaside. You have regional importance up in Pocomoke, Tangier Sound, and just local importance for various avian species. This one was birds, it wasn't bats.
Just the NOAA bathymetry chart showing where we have the very shallow water areas, less than 2 meters, and what is generally referred to as shallow water habitat down to 4 meters. And we characterize the less than 2 meters as major conflict for wind energy, but moderate conflict is down to 4 meters. So as you obviously get in some of the areas, you start to run into those conflicts. Moderate conflict map, putting things together. Here's some of the resources that we thought were important to capture. Again, moderate conflict up in this area due to the burn issues. And then down in this area, moderate conflict due to blue crab spawning and nursery habitat at the mouth of the bay. Resources here, and the depth contours of 2 to 4 meters, the lighter blue. Just some of the data that was used as part of that characterization for moderate conflict areas. The crab sanctuary is in the whole bay, but we felt that the major conflict with regard to crabs and activities associated with wind energy would be the spawning area at the mouth of the bay. We have fishery management areas that we included in moderate conflict. We have small green or the reef sites. These are special management areas for shellfish mostly, and then we have special management areas for fisheries anadromous, and I think this is the black drum management area. Just recognizing that there's a sensitive resource in that area that would have to be considered for any wind energy siting projects. Sand resources, we pulled together, tried to find data on where sand resources have been mapped near the mouth of the bay. And this is important because we know sand's being used to nourish beaches and shorelines throughout Hampton Roads, and what we don't want to do is present a conflict and prevent the use of that particular resource in the future. So it seems that it may not be appropriate to site wind energy. Well, it could, but it's going to require some considerations of in these areas where there is sand resources at the mouth of the bay. And again, it's my eyes or the map that's getting of the state is getting fainter and fainter all the time here. And what we end up with, if you then consider where we have lesser conflicts, the colored areas here in the bay are what ended up being lesser conflicts, areas that weren't excluded, areas that weren't major conflicts or moderate conflicts. And what then we have is the wind energy potential map showing the colors here. And so what we ended up with is only one small area of class 5 winds, and that's off of Silver Beach. Give you an idea of where it is in the bay. So there's not much there, and so it really boils down to one thing the General Assembly asked us to do as the commission is that if we found the suitable areas, that we could start to offer sites for leases, for uses of state waters. And from this research, it doesn't look like there's a lot of opportunity to offer some vast area for leasing, although we might find that someone is interested in the future to come forward to the commission and request leases. But this is the kind of information that would help sort of, drive or influence or their decisions to move forward. And then just going back to the overall map, just what it looked like when you put it all together.
Tony, don't interrupt you. Go back to the classification, to that off Silver Beach. How much area is that at Class 5, roughly?
I think, in my recollection, I tried to measure it one time. It's maybe about 3 miles long, a mile wide. I mean, it tapers down, but it's at its maximum width, maybe a mile, as long as maybe about 3 miles.
Do you have any idea why, just in that one corridor, they bump up to Class 5?
I don't know. If you remember the wind map that just showed the winds, there's this band through here that showed high wind resources, and I don't know what the dynamics are of the land masses and what causes that, but that tends to be a higher wind area. I know I mentioned it to Hank one time. He said, you know what, when you're over in Tangier, Pocomoke Sound over off of Mancock up in that Watts Island area, you know, the wind always blows. And for those of you who fished over there and been out there, you probably recognize it's always a windy area. And I don't know which direction it might be all the time, but from crabbing over there as a kid in my teens, I remember it always blew hard out of the southwest in the summertime, and that's what you had to watch out for on certain days.
Anyway, the map. But what I wanted to do just real quickly is, if you focus down in on some areas and start to look at some of the detail, you start to see even a more sort of clear picture of the conflicts. This is the seaside eastern shore behind Hog Island. This is the SAV sanctuary for restoration. You see all the leases for aquaculture. You see the public grounds. You see the shell plant areas. You know, you have the navigation channel coming up through here. So very quickly you see that it's a lot going on. Areas are pretty much taken up by other uses that might conflict with anything like, a wind energy facility. One thing that was expressed, if you recall, when Senator Wagner and George Hegerman from Virginia Tech were here last summer talking about wind energy, they talked about maybe we want to consider something and have the roads for a test turbine. And could we put something near the Mont Merrimack maybe as a test? And so we looked at Hampton Roads and what are the conflicts. And this is our Oyster Ground leasing map with all the other uses sort of overlaid on it. And it's a very busy map, but it's in our report. It shows the channels, it shows the anchorages, it shows the public grounds highlighted here, the private leases, and this is our Oyster Sanctuary area. And so what you quickly realize is there's not a lot of space in Hampton Roads that's not already designated for something else. One area we did focus in on, this is the Monterey, this area here, focus in here. What we have here is the entrance into the small boat harbor, and this actually depicts a grant or deed from the General Assembly to Newport News for port development. So that submerged land was granted to Newport News. And it's a fact that, you know, one area that's been sort of, talked about, I don't know how serious it's being considered, but possibly. This is the wave screen, that small boat harbor, and you know, maybe there's an opportunity out in here for a test turbine to evaluate it, how it works in the marine environment, how it can be installed in the marine environment, and be close enough to shore for easy access, even maybe by a pier, so that the research could be conducted on turbine. I know BSER, through George Hegerman, actually walked out here with me one day on the pier to look at the areas to get a sense of what it's like. Maybe looking at that area for a test turbine down the road. There's some areas just west of the island that's part of Newport News. And there might be some other areas in here that aren't part of the Newport News granted area that state submerged lands that would be appropriate. But again, you're close to the channel and you got lots of uses. Another thing is, if you look at this map, this is the Norfolk Navy Base. Chambers Airfield at Norfolk Navy Base runs about in this orientation, so planes are coming around and across the mountains, across Hampton Roads for landing. So there's a big airspace potential conflict for very much in Hampton Roads. And again, we're talking turbines several hundred feet up to 400 feet in height. So you have to start worried about air traffic in the area.
Yes, you recall when we were dealing with the Jordan Bridge, that was nowhere near 400 feet, and it was already an FAA
That's
consideration
correct.
There as well.
But okay, just going forward a little bit with what VSERC had done and where the emphasis seems to have been focused in Virginia. It's been offshore in federal waters because that's where the potential wind is. I mean, in reality, if you've got a developer who's interested in an industrial complex for wind energy production, they want to put up multiple towers and provide energy just to the electric distribution system, they're going to go where the better wind is. And just by going a few miles offshore, you start to get better wind resources from 5 to 6 class winds. And so what VSERC did was looked at areas off of Virginia Beach for potential siting, trying to avoid military uses and other navigation concerns off of Hampton Roads. And these are actually lease blocks in the MMS system that they looked at for potential wind energy generation. And you can see the areas they focused on. And this is, again, you're out in about 12 miles at this line here. So the 3-mile line is up in here. So you're well off Virginia's water into federal Mineral Management Service jurisdiction. And in fact, the Minerals Management Service has convened a stakeholder group in Virginia to help them with identifying issues and concerns and trying to facilitate offshore wind energy development. And in fact, two companies have approached MMS about siting wind farms, I'll use that term, off of Virginia's coast. And they were starting to evaluate those requests and figure out how they're going to go through the
leasing and bidding process for these lease blocks offshore. But one major concern that's come up and is the military use of Virginia's, the federal waters off Virginia's coast. And the military provided this map and a report just within the last week. It was discussed at the last MMS stakeholder meeting here in Virginia a few weeks ago. And what you can see real clearly is the military has some major concerns about activities in these blocks here, potential for wind energy, and these blocks here. But so, again, I think this is something the industry and MMS and the Virginia and folks in Virginia who are part of this offshore Virginia MMS task force will be looking at and trying to figure out how this will all work out. And with regard to the offshore area, one thing we looked at in our assessment was where would it be appropriate to bring that power ashore? And one thing that sort of came up as a potential site, and this is included in our report, and we suggest this might be the best site from a marine use standpoint and use conflict standpoint, but I'm sure there might be other issues that we didn't focus on, but is the area off of Dam Neck. This is close to the major electrical distribution systems in Virginia Beach. In fact, at Fentress, there's this 500 kilovolt transmission station, which you need those types of electrical infrastructure for these large-scale projects. And that's the other thing. We saw the area off of Silver Beach, where there's some classified wind, but there's not the electrical distribution system on the eastern shore to handle a large project. Nor is there an electrical distribution system really anywhere else in Virginia that we know of other than Virginia Beach that can handle a large-scale wind energy facility. So, again, that's part of the reason that the focus has been offshore of Virginia Beach. So, anyway, you have the electrical distribution system in Virginia, it's a large 500 kV station in Fentress. And then, right at Dam Neck, we have a sewage treatment plant outfall for the Atlantic Ocean Treatment Plant. It goes out to this hatched area here, and then this whole area is condemned. Well, I don't think anyone's harvesting shellfish in that area. It is covered by a active condemnation zone by the Shellfish Sanitation Department. And so what we felt is that if you're going to bring power ashore, you would probably avoid potential other use conflicts if you brought the power corridor through this area. And of course, it would be buried. How far it needs to be buried would probably be up for debate, but it probably needed to be buried deep enough so that it didn't have significant effects, and it could possibly be directionally bored for a good part of that area. So basically that's the report. Where we go from here is that I think we're going to need, anytime we get a lease request or as we review procedures for leasing and as we review potential applications for wind energy projects, this is just some assessment, some type of information that we have to consider. To be more important in some areas than others for certain of these items on the list. But that, none of that would occur without the appropriate public interest review and opportunity for public comment. And so really the next step that we'll be going through, we think, is looking at state mineral management plan and converting that to what we call a state Sebaquis Minerals and Coastal Energy Management Plan. That currently, the Sebaquis Minerals Management Plan is part of the state mineral management plan that was developed by the Department of Mines, Minerals, and Energy. And in 2004, they revised the state mineral management plan and at the same time updated and revised the Sebaquis Minerals Management Plan to be consistent with what they had in the mineral management plan. So it looks like what we're going to have to do is go back to that 2004 update by MMS and look at amending it to recognize renewable energy projects in state waters. So that's all I have. It's intended to give you an update of where this is and what some of the issues are. So if you have any questions, I'd be glad to try and...
Mr. Tanker? Tony, I saw in your original slides that you had sort of more terrestrial based turbines, but I've read recently about tethered turbines and how the efficiencies of actually floating something up, almost like a kite, can generate quadruple the amount of power that something on land or on water. Did you? No. It's apparently MIT professors have been working on this.
I just thought I'd consider that potential. And I guess if you can tether it, it's just a matter of getting it up in the air.
Right.
Again, one of the things here is going to have to be, can you do that on land?
Right, if you can do that on land.
You wouldn't have to be out everywhere.
Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Attorney, thank you for the presentation. Has there been a formal assessment of federal fisheries resources in the proposed site outside of 3 Mile that you're aware of?
I don't know. I'm not aware of it. They will, in terms of their leasing process, have to go up through a full-blown EIS development to determine the issues associated with the lease sales in the future. So I have to imagine that part of that environmental impact statement preparation will include fisheries in the federal.
Mr. Fox and Dr. McConaughey.
Tony, do you have any update on what's going on in Nantucket Sound? That project seemed to be farther along.
And I'm going to just tell you what I think I have learned through newspaper articles, and many of you probably read the same thing. Cape Winds is the project that they're referring to. It's now been approved through the federal process, as I understand. I think there might be some legal challenges, but I'm not real clear on that. But that started a number of years ago, and it started with projects being more or less reviewed by the Corps of Engineers, but in the interim, MMS, Department of Interior, was given the authority to manage renewable energy projects in federal waters, and that happens to be in federal waters, as I understand it. And they've gone through the full-blown EIS process and the review, and my understanding is at that level it's been either authorized, permitted, or it's in the process of being permitted. So unless there's a challenge that would stop that project, it looks like it's moving forward.
Dr. McConaughey?
Just a comment to Mr. Robbins. Based on the MMS workshop for the offshore oil drilling, the fisheries are woefully out of date. Back in the 70s was the last assessment that was done out there. So it would all have to be done again.
Further questions? Yeah, absolutely, Dave.
Tony, those four categories you mentioned, the excluded, major, moderate, and lesser, if you're presented with an application, in which of those categories could staff recommend approval? Lesser and moderate? Or
I think lesser is first of all, in any area, we'd have to conduct our public interest review and see what shakes out of more detailed analysis of the site and the condition. But based on what we're seeing, if it were in lesser, it certainly suggests there's lesser conflicts and resource issues that would be easier to justify permit authorization. Moderate potential with appropriate evaluations and concurrence that we're not causing too much of a use conflict or a resource, a threat to a resource. When you start getting into the major conflicts and obviously the excluded areas, I think it's going to be hard to justify permit approval in those areas would be my just assessment at this point. Not to say that you couldn't put something in the major conflict area, but we've recognized through this assessment there were issues that would be potentially problematic.
Further questions? Tony, thanks a lot for a job well done. I know you put a lot of time and effort in working to a good product. I appreciate it.